This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And welcome to episode 22, I believe it is.
I think we're 21. No, that was last week.
Last week was 21, yeah.
Yeah, okay, we are 22.
This is episode 22 of the M Squared TechCast. Yeah, yes. you wouldn't believe it's been almost half a year now. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah, that's something. Well, anyway, we've got a jam-packed show for you today, so we're going to dispense with our usual chit-chat about the news headlines. You can read all of the Michigan tech headlines you'd care to know at Mike's website, mitechnews.com, and at my little tech blog, techcentury.com, which I am still doing, but I did want to mention and give thanks and credit to my new employer as of today. I am director of the News Bureau and public relations manager at Lawrence Technological University in Southfield. Yes, indeed. Shameless plug for dear old LTU. I am no longer full-time with ESD now. I'm just one of those volunteers at ESD. So I'm helping them out with a few things, websites and whatnot. But my full-time gig is now at Lawrence Tech, and I'm very happy about that.
And I saw your office this morning on Facebook. Very impressive.
Yeah. Real nice little college cubicle. What's funny about it is that window in the back of my office there.
That is a window?
It looks out on nothing, though, however.
It's
because that used to be where I sit used to be the cashier's office of the admissions department.
Whoa, and people now, could bring you money though.
Yes, yeah. Well, that is, if they're mistaken, they still might, I guess.
Perfect.
But it's now the marketing and public affairs office at admissions and is in a different location.
We just got to get you some art on the wall. Look kind of Spartan in there. Yeah. Yes, I know you'd like that. Yes, okay.
All right.
So we have on speaking of Spartans, but you're not a Spartan. You're actually a U of M grad living in Spartan land. It's Patrick Anderson. Patrick, gosh, you have so many companies, but the one we're talking about today is Supported Intelligence, the spinoff company, right?
That's right. A great technology company started right here in Michigan.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about what Supported Intelligence does, and then we'll get into this cannabis report. Yes, we're going to talk about cannabis.
Okay.
But first, let's talk about how you guys do this. How you came up with the report, how you came up with your findings, that sort of thing.
Well, Supported Intelligence is a company that's brought to market some first-in-the-world data analytics and decision analytics software, that a lot of which was coded right here in Michigan, the only type of its kind in the world, and uses a new method that's not been commercially available till now. One of the things it's particularly good at is looking at highly risky enterprises, situations where two or three things could happen or might have black swan events. So you're not quite sure whether you even have a chance. And one of those is obviously in the cannabis market here, where cannabis is illegal. We're talking marijuana, Mary Jane, lots of different terms here, of course.
Yeah, good old pot was always my favorite term.
Yeah, you know, right? Lefties, there's all sorts of names here for them. But
right.
Go ahead.
You know, and as somebody who, you know, went to U of M in Ann Arbor and endured many hash bashes, I have heard this, or, you know.
Sounds like a confession to me,
smell.
Patrick.
Yeah.
But go ahead. We won't tell anyone.
I did inhale it. I don't care who knows. It was the 70s.
You know,
what can I tell you?
Yeah, what
you
can
know,
you say?
Come on.
You know.
So.
The question for a lot of people, policymakers, taxpayers, and even some business investors is the trend going to continue across the country? And are people actually going to vote to legalize recreational or medical use? Michigan has voted to legalize medical use, but not recreational use. And, of course, in Ohio, they just voted it down. So there's a big question. And one of the things that's not been known and it's been subject to wild exaggeration and rank speculation is, what's the size of the market? How many people are actually going to use the substance if it was legal? And that's important if you're a taxpayer, because there's a lot of claims there's going to be all this tax money that's going to be raised. It's important if you're an investor and perhaps you're interested in investing in a business that does that. And if you're involved in public health or you're very concerned about the use of this substance and how it would interact with alcohol, et cetera. So we decided to take a sober look, and I mean a sober look, not an enthusiast look, a very careful look.
You inhaled, though, right? So, no, you didn't. Okay, go ahead.
I didn't inhale anything. You can see in our report, which you can get an executive summary for free on the Anderson Economic Group site.
Or it's on my site, too, by the way. So.
Yeah, and the report itself has an incredible amount of data for every single state, looking at the size of the market, looking at the likelihood that the voters might legalize it, looking at the possible tax revenue, looking at the possible cannibalization of other markets. It's really the best resource of its type out there for people that want to actually have some level-headed look at the potential for legalized marijuana, tax revenue, usage, et cetera, in the United States.
So, Patrick, since we are Michigan-centric on this program, I'm just curious, what is the public's current opinion of recreational use?
If you ask most Americans, what they say is most Americans are really considering whether they want to legalize it, but they're not enthusiasts for it. And one of the things you see in our report is we're not claiming that all these states are about ready to vote to legalize it. We didn't forecast that Michigan would vote to legalize. Obviously, in 2015 came and went. 2016 has started, and there's no legalization ballot yet for that. So what we're forecasting in here is that most states are going to be going slow, and we think Michigan is a go-slow state here. We're Midwestern. We're practical. We want to get some experience. I think voters wanted medical marijuana here. There have been some troubles with implementing it, but I think Michigan's generally going to go slow in this.
Washington State and Colorado already have legalized it. did you look at how it's doing there in terms of generating tax dollars, how it's being received by the public, whether it's causing more crime, whatever?
Yeah, we absolutely did. And one of the reasons that our work is so useful here is that we very carefully looked at states like Colorado and Washington, and also Alaska has now voted, and we looked at what the actual usage was in those states. We recognize the fact that all states are not like Colorado. I mean, Colorado's a tourism state. Colorado's a state that people travel out there to go skiing, and maybe they go out there for other recreational purposes too. That's a little different than a state like Michigan or a state like Ohio or a lot of Midwestern states. So we use the information from those other states to help calibrate our estimates for states like Michigan, and also to get an interesting guide. I mean, if you look at what states voted, it's not random. The states that are interested in that are states like Colorado that have a tradition of being more experimental on some of these policy things, and they're the likely first ones to go. And then states like Michigan are probably going to sit back and watch for a little bit before they decide.
Yeah, I would put us at the middle of the road in that aspect too, I guess. Not one of the early adopters, but not one of the very last either. Who knows though? In terms of the revenue possibilities, what kind of revenue possibility is there for this anyway? I know Colorado's been pleasantly surprised by the level of revenue.
Well, Colorado has gotten good tax revenue, a little bit higher than some people expected. And we look at that and say, well, of course, some people are flying out there to try it.
Sure.
I mean, and it's a novelty state. Think of Las Vegas.
When they had a monopoly.
Atlantic
City. Yeah, right.
Right. When we look at a state like Michigan is a good-sized market. And you see from our leaf chart that's in the free executive summary that you can get on.
I like
Anderson
that. Leaf
chart, yeah, serrated, leaf no
chart.
Doubt. Yeah, right.
We're a 4.5 leaf state out of 5 possible, so that's nearly $600 million. In potential state market demand for legal recreational use if we were to legalize it. And that's over $100 million in state sales and excise tax revenue if you were to use a standard excise scheme. But it's not $1 billion.
In fact,
this is approximately half what some of the advocates have asserted.
And what?
It's a good-sized amount of money.
Yeah, one thing I was curious about, Patrick, is there a way as law enforcement has for alcohol with the breathalyzer, is there a way to easily test whether someone is driving a car or doing something else under the influence of cannabis? Is there a quick test now? Because there didn't used to be.
You know, I'm afraid you're outside my area of expertise, my friend. I can't tell you that.
Well, because that would be, I mean, that would be one of the things that would keep me from voting for it if there wasn't any way to, you know, for the cops to check if someone was really loaded on pot as opposed to on booze. Then, you know, I would feel iffy about that because you shouldn't be driving on either one of them, right? So, you know.
Well, the other thing is if you're smoking it, I think it's pretty obvious. But if you're ingesting it in a cookie or whatever.
Yeah.
There's no obvious telltale signs, right?
Yeah. And one of the things we identified for reasons why people might go slow is there's not standardized amounts. There's not standardized products yet. If you think about, say, alcoholic beverages, you have a really good idea what a 12-ounce beer means and what a shot of whiskey means. You have an idea what the size is, what it looks like, what it tastes like, how much alcohol is in it, and that hasn't occurred yet in the cannabis market, even in states like Colorado, and I think a lot of citizens are going to be quite properly reluctant to purchase those products or use them, even if they're legal, until they get a lot more comfortable with the products and the packaging and the size and the potency.
Yeah, that's a very good point because I don't think people fully appreciate just how closely regulated alcohol is. I mean, it's extremely closely regulated in terms of what you're allowed to put out on the market and how it's tested and, you know, all that stuff. And it's still sort of Wild West when it comes to the pot market in Colorado and Washington, from what I understand.
Well, then the potency issue, I mean, if you – I've been told, if you mix it in with a brownie, I mean, if it's cheap Mexican stuff, one thing, but if it's really, you know, Hawaiian, different effect completely.
Yeah, you're going to wind up on the floor. Right? Yeah. Yeah, so.
Sounds like Mike's been watching too many Alton Brown episodes.
Yeah, well, I can't speak to these things. I just watch a lot of TV, so.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of us that used to be able to speak to these things. Yeah, you're right about that, Patrick. And I'm just sort of curious, what prompted you to take a look at this? Was it someone requested it? Was this something you just did entrepreneurially, or what was the genesis of all this?
Now, this is a collaboration between the consulting firm Anderson Economic Group and the technology firm Support Intelligence. And Anderson Economic Group, which a lot of people know in Michigan, as you said earlier, we do a lot of reports on tax policy. We benchmark every state for tax burden. We do benchmarking reports for Automation Alley, the high-tech reports for our major research universities. People rely on those because they're very well done, very carefully put together. But we looked out there in the whole public policy area, and state by state by state, there has been no reliable information on the size of the market, the potential tax revenue. People really have been all over the map. They're forced to rely on things like criminal seizure amounts to indicate, you know, how many people would buy this and use it. And we wanted to go in and come up with a really thoroughly researched, carefully done report that could be used in all 50 states. And so we turned to our technology partners to get the ability to handle a very large amount of data, and we decided we'd come out with the first report of its kind. And so first report of its kind done here in Michigan.
We're going to have to unfortunately leave it at that because we're running out of time in this segment. We'll get Patrick on the show again because seems like you come out with a report a week on something, right?
We got some great folks doing some great work up here.
Oh, and be sure to give your website for all the people who might want to take a look at this.
Yeah, if you look at AndersonEconomicGroup.com, and you can go at the top, and that publication is easy to find, or go to our publication pages. And there's a lot of good information. You know, take a look at the cannabis executive summary. Look at your favorite state, see how many leaves it has. If you're interested in the detailed information, you could buy the whole 250-page plus report. And while you're there, take a look at some of our other publications that are up there about our universities, about our high-tech hubs and other good things.
All right. Thanks, Patrick, from Anderson Economic Group in Lansing. For now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, and we'll be right back with our next segment. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Sorry, we had a joke off air there, but we won't go into it. I have on the line, I'm not laughing at you, Andrew, but do we have on the line Andrew Basile Jr., a partner in Young Basile in Troy. That's your main headquarters, right?
That's right.
Okay, cool. And so he's going to be talking about the whole issue of can you patent software, which I have no idea. Can you?
You certainly can. And I'm joined today by my colleague, Keith Schoenberger, as well.
All right.
Hey,
so
Keith.
Go ahead and take it away, Andrew. Let's talk about that whole issue. I was unaware that that could even be done.
Well, as a matter of fact, it used to be very easy to patent software. In fact, not only just software, but business methods generally were patentable from about the late 1990s until perhaps a year or two ago. And the signature case for that proposition was State Street Bank. And that was the case in which the court said, technology is patentable, and software is technology, and in fact, so are certain kinds of business methods, and it's all patentable.
Okay, so under what circumstances was it thought not to be patentable? Because to me, it seems fairly straightforward that it would be. It's a product like any other. It's designed. It's kind of manufactured.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. If you ask a patent lawyer, of course, they would tell you it should always be patentable.
Right.
But what happened, I think, was in the last 5 or 6 years, we had a lot of lawsuits filed by the so-called trolls. Are you guys familiar with the trolls?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yes, sir.
These are non-practicing entities that own patents. They don't have a product or a company, and they basically are in business to simply assert the patents. And so this led to a profusion of software patent litigation, which became cumbersome and expensive for many companies. And so there seemed to be a groundswell of opposition to the idea of having software patents. And I don't know whether that motivated the Supreme Court or not, but in recent years, the court had a case, the Alice case, as it's known as, Alice v. CLS Bank. And in that case, the court changed the criteria for when software is or is not patentable. And the basic concern the court had was that some patents pertaining to software are really just covering an abstract idea.
Okay.
So that's the gist of the question today, is if the patent or the alleged invention is directed to an abstract idea, it can't qualify for patent, but if it's addressed to a concrete technological improvement, it can.
Can you give me an example of what a software linked to an abstract idea would be and therefore not patentable?
Well, sure. Let's suppose that you had a software program that collected the names and addresses of people that you thought would be likely prospects. And then every afternoon it would send some of those prospects emails encouraging them to purchase your products. Now, that may not be a new idea. That's one problem that idea has. It's probably not novel. But assuming it was novel, the court might be very likely to say that that is an abstract idea. And so you get a real intellectual challenge in trying to figure out when a piece of software is or is not an abstract idea. Now, the courts have done us a little bit of a favor. They have articulated a test, the so-called two-part test, for determining when a software invention is or is not patentable. Would you guys like to hear about the two-part test?
Sure,
absolutely.
Okay. Well, to assist me in that, I'm going to ask my colleague, Keith Schoenberger, to review that with you. Keith?
Sure. So we have this two-part test from Alice. The first part is asking, is the software merely abstract? Kind of like what we were talking about a second ago. Now, what does abstract mean here? Again, fundamental, natural, formulaic. So we have the example that Andy gave. In Alice, in the case itself, we were dealing with software for mitigating settlement risk. It was essentially an intermediary for exchanging obligations between creditors and debtors. And the court said that this was too abstract. It was abstract because it is a fundamental economic process that is used in commerce. So that's the first part of the test.
Okay.
Is it abstract? No. If it is abstract, we move on to the second part, which asks, does the invention constitute significantly more than just an abstract idea? Does it improve the technical field? Does it add something new to the mix beyond what is just routine or conventional?
Yeah, and to kind of amplify what Keith just said, I mean, when you think of abstract ideas, and I'm a simple man, so I like to keep things simple. So I always think of it as if I could do it in my head or with a pen and paper, it's probably an abstract idea. And then the second part of the test that Keith mentioned is, well, okay, but is there something in addition to what you do in your head or with a pen and paper that involves technology? Are you actually improving technology? Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
Oh, well, we have Rachel Downs in the studio from Inforum. She actually wants to ask a question. Go ahead, Rachel.
So would an algorithm pass the two-part test?
Well, it's funny you use the word algorithm. That's kind of one of those words under this new Alice regime that we don't like to use very often, because algorithms are sort of assumed to be merely abstract and therefore unpatentable per se. And so we wouldn't really talk about an algorithm. Really, we would talk about the technological advantage that's achieved by use of that algorithm. And we try and cast the invention in that fashion. So let me give you some concrete examples. Let's suppose that I have a computer, and the computer has memory. And the memory is consumed during the operation of the computer. You know, different programs use memory. And, of course, the problem eventually is that if I have enough programs running at one time, all the memory in the computer will be consumed, right? So I need to optimize my use of memory so that I don't use it all up. But at the same time, I provision each of the processes with a necessary amount of memory for it to use. So that's an algorithm, right? But if I talk about the algorithm just as I've said it, you know, we're going to have a mathematical formula to process data by itself, that would likely be viewed as abstract and not deemed patentable. But if I put it in the broader technical context, that I actually have a technological problem of managing the memory of a computer, and that I'm not just churning data, but I'm actually allocating memory to one process or the other, then that technological aspect of it is what makes it patentable. And so really it's important to someone working in the field that wants to get their stuff patented to be sure that there's some technological result or technological improvement, that there's a machine that's being built, there's some physical transformation that's taking place. Let me give you another example of the algorithm. Let's suppose that my algorithm involved figuring out how long I want to conduct a certain chemical process. And if I do it too long, the chemicals burn up. If I don't do it long enough, they don't process correctly. I have to do it just the right amount of time. So I devise an algorithm to calculate this time. Now, if I go to the patent office and say, here's my algorithm, here's the formula, well, they might say that's abstract, and they might not give me a patent. But if I stylize it in terms of the physical transformation of the chemical process, and it's just a component of that, I have to determine the outcome time, then I may have something that is, in fact, patentable. So it's been an interesting time. A lot of patents that were allowed a few years ago have been found under this new Alice rule to be invalid because they're deemed to be directed to unpatentable subject matter. And we've even had a case where we had a patent that was allowed in the patent office and was due to issue. And the day it was supposed to issue, they said, you know what, we're sorry, the rules have changed, and we're not going to issue this patent anymore. Mm. We think it's abstract.
Well, I'm really proud to say at Grit Design, we just had our software patent issued about 3 weeks ago.
And that's Andrea Livingston. We try to identify the voices for the callers out there.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff because, as you said, it's been very difficult and the laws and the rules have changed. But because we were able to show sort of the utility out of it and how it does change the way that things were manufactured in the past, that it takes it from the abstract into something more tangible. And so we were granted it and we were thrilled. because it was a long time.
Well, and that was something that was, you know, plainly part of earlier patent laws when we were talking about manufacturing processes and things like that. They always looked at what they called the prior art, right, Andrew?
That's correct.
And the it had to be a significant advance on the prior art, or else you weren't going to get a patent. It would seem to me to be fairly straightforward here. It's the same way with software, more or less.
Well, that's a very astute observation. I mean, the prior art goes to the question of, is the invention new, and is it not obvious? Have you actually invented something?
Yeah.
But what we're talking about with software is a separate inquiry, which is this invention within the realm of patentable subject matter? So it could be as new as could be, but still unpatentable because it's deemed to be an abstract idea.
Even if it's, you know, new and not obvious, huh? Okay, that's interesting.
But two separate inquiries.
Oh, okay.
We're running out of time in this segment. Let's get a little more information about Young Basile. Andrew, I know you well. I know what you do. Well, let's talk a little bit about what your company does for the audience out there in case they want to follow up and get some more information on this very valuable information.
Sure. We are an IP law firm, patent law firm. We do the bulk of our work in Northern California, although we are based here in Detroit. We have a staff of about 33 lawyers, including my good friend and colleague Keith by my side. And, you know, we work primarily with technology-driven companies and mainly in this particular space, software and electronics.
All right. And if folks want to get more information, go to your website, call you. How do they do that?
They can go to our website, youngbasile.com.
And should they go for you or go for Keith or what? Sounds like Keith is the guy.
My God, I would go for Keith Schoenberger. If it were my money, if I were spending my hard-earned dollars, I would call Keith Schoenberger.
Call Keith. I like that. It could be a whole advertising campaign. Call Keith, right?
So yeah, you better call Keith. Yeah,
yeah, like no lawyer's ever run anything like that before. Okay. But it's Young Basile.
Keith wins.
Yeah, it's Young Basile, YOUNGBASILE. That's the website.
That's correct.
All right, great. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank Keith. Is it Schoenberger?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
All right, and of course, Andrew Basile, one of the principals there. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back with our next segment, Linda Dyshent from Mobile Michigan, Michigan Mobile Mondays, the Michigan...
Say that fast three times.
No thanks. I'll get right in trouble. All right, anyway, we're going to be talking mobile in just a moment. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, and now...
Oh, a drum roll, please. Remember, I'll ring the bell.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Linda Dyshent, who, gosh, she has many titles, CEO, founder, what else, of the Michigan Mobile, I can't do it, Michigan Technology Association.
No, Mobile Technology Association of Michigan.
Matt and I have been going around and around on that. Just in the last segment, we butchered that too. So go ahead, tell us the right way to say it, Linda.
Please.
Mobile Technology Association of Michigan.
And the website?
GoMobileMichigan.org.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I know this is your baby. You've been on the circuit about as long as I have trying to build these companies, right? You've been doing this for 5-6 years now, I'm thinking. Maybe longer than that.
Yeah, since 2009 is when we started. We started Mobile Monday Michigan chapters at the same time as we started the Trade Association, and we've been building it all concurrently.
That's what I want to talk briefly about. I know you want to talk about other things, but I wanted to. I know you don't know what's going on with all the different, because you got four of them around the state. I'm not really talking about the theme of each event, but Michigan Mobile Mondays in general. Why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because that gives people a chance to not only hear you on the radio, as it were, internet radio, but also to come out and see what's going on with all these fabulous technologists that you have in your organization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mobile Monday is actually, it's an international organization, and here in Michigan, MTAM has the rights to Mobile Monday. Internationally, there are actually 100 chapters worldwide in 70 countries.
Wow.
Here in Michigan, we have 4 chapters. In Grand Rapids, Ann Arbor, Detroit, and Lansing. And we are looking at some other cities so that we can spread it more around the state, where there's more pockets of people who are working on mobile and wireless tech. So if there's other people who are listening and are interested, we're certainly interested in hearing from them so we can get some new chapters started.
Absolutely. In general, though, let's talk about what kind of subject matter these various chapters talk about. I mean, I won't ask, pin you down for what's happening in February, but what typically has gone on in the past?
Well, really, honestly, it's anything to do with mobile and wireless technology. So some of the chapters are very specific into the, you know, how to do it, very much, you know, from a mobile app development specific technology perspective. Other chapters are very much into, you know, how this particular industry is focusing on it. So they look at it from a big picture standpoint, how mobile technology is impacting healthcare or automotive or manufacturing. And so each chapter is led by a local group of people, so they understand the local marketplace and what's happening in that local community. And they go around and they make connections in that local community, and then they pick topics that will be important to the people in that community.
So tell me a little bit about the state of the industry in Michigan right now. How is the mobile industry doing? How is the app development industry doing in terms of business formation and success of the apps that people are writing?
You know, it's really amazing because Michigan is booming in the mobile and wireless tech area. Unfortunately, we're like the best kept secret in the country, and even in Michigan. It's amazing because every job in mobile wireless tech in Michigan also creates 6.54 additional jobs in the state, which is actually more jobs created than even the automotive industry creates, because automotive only creates 5.92 additional jobs in the state. It's an amazing thing what's happening here, and people just still don't understand how much is happening here and how many jobs are being created in every industry because of these technologies. So we're doing our best to really get the word out and help people understand the great jobs that they can have staying here in Michigan, no matter what industry they want to be a part of.
And you can get that information not only at GoMobileMichigan.org, I mean?
.org, yeah. GoMobileMichigan.org, and coming to our Mobile Mondays. And we also do a variety of events from time to time. We're also working with the SBDC, and we're putting on more mobile app boot camps for our entrepreneurs, for non-tech entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of things going on to help people.
And you can also find that at my website, mitechnews.com, because MTAM is one of my partners, says, and will be announcing that Inforum is going to be one of our partners here. We have in the studio, you probably know Rachel Downs, do you not, Linda?
Hi, Linda.
I do. Absolutely. Hi, Rachel.
And then we're also talking to Keith Brophy about bringing in his group The small business, there's too many acronyms here. I can't keep them all straight. It's the Michigan Small Business Development Center, right? That's what it's called?
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah. Keith is, we're in talks with Keith. I'm supposed to meet him this month. So it's one big happy family on M Squared TechCast. But go ahead. Let's talk a little bit more mobile, which is like for autos. I mean, that should be our space, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we definitely own that space, and the perception is that the Silicon Valley is going to steal it from us, but I assure you that is not going to happen. There's too many things happening here in Michigan. That is definitely going to remain here in Michigan. There's a lot of Silicon Valley companies that are actually starting to open up space here in Michigan. There's a lot of things that we're doing that are bringing them here. So have no fear. Michigan will remain the transportation capital of the world.
Well, and certainly mobile, that's going to really help. Because, I mean, just think of everybody with their smartphones, and they all want to Bluetooth them into their cars or trucks or whatever they're driving. And that's just the beginning. I mean, it's just there's so many things. It's all going mobile. I mean, I've done all these reports about right now there's like some incredible number of smartphones in the world, like a couple billion smartphones. And you just think, wow, really? There's only like 7 billion people in the world. So everyone loves it. Look at me. I mean, I'm sitting on the desk here. Without that, I don't know how I'd communicate, right? So.
Well, you know, and mobile devices are going to very quickly surpass the number of people on the planet very quickly. And you know, people are going to have multiple devices. People do have multiple devices, and that's why the number of devices on the planet is going to surpass the number of people. And that's why we're going to need to understand how all these things connect and the opportunity that it provides for us as a society. And Michigan is definitely in a situation where we're starting to learn that we need to take advantage of all the opportunity that that brings for us, for the businesses in our state, for our education community that needs to embrace making sure that our students are prepared to take advantage of that from a career perspective.
So tell me a little bit about what happens at these boot camps that you run. What kind of experience is that for people?
The boot camps are actually for entrepreneurs who are non-tech entrepreneurs, but they have an idea for a business that needs to utilize mobile and wireless technologies in some way, but they don't have the tech capabilities of doing it. So this teaches them how to go about working with someone in the mobile and wireless space, how to find someone, how to tell them the idea, how to understand how to work with a firm, how to make sure that they're being treated fairly, what kind of pricing they should expect, all those kinds of things so that they're fully prepared, that they can convey their idea, so that they are, so that they're prepared to work with them just like they would work with any other vendor, so that they can get the best work out of them and make sure that their idea is successful.
So you just did one of those with Automation Alley, I'm thinking about a month or so ago, wasn't it?
It was a few months ago now. I think it was November. Doing the next one. It will be in Lansing in April. We have another one that will take place in Washtenaw in June, and we have one in Grand Rapids in July, and we have one more we're scheduling after that. We haven't decided on a location yet.
So how did the Automation, since that was your first, how did the Automation Alley boot camp go?
It was great. It sold out, and believe me, we could have fit a lot more people in there. If we had room, we could have put a lot more people in. There was a lot more demand for it. It was very successful. We had a lot of great comments about it. People were very excited to learn the information that we conveyed, and I think we'll get the same kind of response for the other boot camps that we're scheduling. There seems to be a lot of interest in it because there's a lot of people who have great business ideas for how they want to use these technologies, but obviously they're not tech people, and so they feel kind of stymied. They don't know how to proceed because they don't have that tech capability. So the whole idea with this is, okay, you don't have this tech knowledge, but you have a great tech idea. Let's teach you how to connect with the right tech people that you need and learn how to work with them so that you can marry those things that you need and make sure that your business can succeed.
Now, if somebody can't get to or doesn't want to go to the boot camp, I'm sure they can go to MTAM and find out how you can connect them with someone who develops these apps, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A big part of what we do is make referrals to Michigan companies so that businesses can connect with them. Absolutely.
And then how many members of MTAM are there now? I lost track. I know you have a mailing list that's pretty extensive, but beyond that, how many are members?
We're probably at about 250 at this point, paid members. As far as the Mobile Mondays, we're well over 3,000.
Wow, that's impressive. Mm,
indeed. And I know there are a lot of hotbeds in Michigan for sort of app development and mobile development. Where do you see the clusters of the industry forming here?
Well, obviously, Detroit is one of them. Ann Arbor is another. I'm starting to definitely see a push in Lansing, which is good because that's kind of been slow for a while. Grand Rapids is definitely one. I'm also starting to see some activity picking up in Traverse City and Saginaw area. So I'm hoping that Traverse City and Saginaw that will also start to see some interest in having some Mobile Monday chapters there as well.
Kalamazoo as well?
I haven't heard a lot about Kalamazoo, but believe me, if there's some people there, I would love to talk to them.
All right. Give that website one last time. We're almost out of time here.
GoMobileMichigan.org.
Okay. And there are memberships available, I would imagine, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And you can find that information on our website.
Okay, well, this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast. Stick around. We're going to be back with Rachel Downs of Inforum.
No,
I always
call her Rochelle
that.
Here.
Yeah,
so.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's what it looks like. See, that's the thing with being a print guy. I don't need to know how to pronounce it. I only need how to know how to spell it. But so we're on the radio now, but yeah. It's Rachel Downs and Andrea Livingston, CEO of Grit Design, with something called Sizzle Pig. This sounds cool.
I can't wait to hear about that.
Okay. So. Well, I like bacon.
Yeah.
But okay. All right. Well, you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan. And, whoop, go ahead. You take it.
No, that's all right. Well, you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast, and this is our fourth and final segment today. It's going to be a great one.
It is. We're going to be introducing a new segment partner. You know, we like to get the newsmakers on this show on a regular basis because it makes it a lot simpler for Matt and I. You know, we don't have to be experts in everything, right?
And by golly, we're simple folk.
We really are. Just like Andrew Basil. I enjoyed that comment.
I was going to
say something, but I let it go. So anyway, we have with us on the show, Rochelle Downs.
It's Rachel.
I'm sorry. That's
It'll take me a while to live that one.
That's a carryover from the last segment. Rachel Downs.
Rachel.
Vice President of Entrepreneurial Strategies. I got that right. With Inform. And some folks may have never heard of Inform. I know, shocking, but go ahead and tell them a little bit about Inform.
Well, Inform is Michigan's largest professional association dedicated to advancing women's success in leadership. We were founded 53 years ago as the Women's Economic Club.
Before you were even born.
Absolutely. Many years before.
Many years before you were born.
12 years ago, we rebranded as Inform, and the Inform Center for Leadership was established to offer a full suite of professional development programs that are designed to meet the needs of women at kind of the classic critical inflection points of their career. I've been leading our entrepreneurial strategy for the last 3 years, which is really designed to leverage Michigan's, I would say, subject matter expertise in STEM industry verticals to establish our state as the preeminent state for high-growth women entrepreneurs.
And you have many great programs like your Engage program, which I know you're fully engaged in.
Yes. Engage is a comprehensive platform with technical assistance programs that guide women through the process of commercializing intellectual property and helps them understand the components that are involved in launching a new high-tech, high-growth venture. Our Engage Masterclass was launched last year, which is a founders forum so women can come together once a month and do a deep dive and really address the challenges that are involved in growing and scaling a high-tech, high-growth firm. And our Role Model and Investor Series is another program that we launched in conjunction with the Accelerate Michigan Conference 2 years ago. And that's designed to celebrate and elevate the stories of women founders throughout the state of Michigan. And at the same time, convene community so women have an opportunity to connect, collaborate, and cross-pollinate and create opportunities with and for each other.
And you have a guest in studio here. Why don't you introduce her and tell her, tell us how she fits into all this?
I do. I'm very excited. Andrea Livingston is the president, CEO and co-founder of Grit Design in Sizzle Pig, and she also was one of the entrepreneurs in our pilot launch of the masterclass last year. So I'm really delighted to have her here today because she's got a fascinating story. She was spent many years in the corporate environment, most recently with Ogilvy Detroit, and launched her company in 2009, which is pretty gutsy.
Right in the heart of the recession.
Oh, yeah. It was such a great year for company formation, right? Yeah.
It really was. It was the best time. First of all, thank you, Rachel, for all that you do with Engage and Inform. It was very helpful to me and our company and our business. But it was the best time because at that time we were in Chicago. We left Detroit with a lot of other people, and we decided to move back and start a company. And it was the best time because as other folks were laying off, it was a really
lots
nice –
lots of talent was available, right?
It was – lots of work was available. We actually grew 180% over that in the first 3 years of our business as marketing – business and marketing technologists. So creating solutions such as apps and sites and mobile solutions for clients. So it was an excellent time. And this year is – so far reminds me very much of 2009, although – our economy seems to be good. We have this influx of inquiries into our business, which is – it's great and it's, you know, a little overwhelming at times, again, because it's bringing me back to 2009 and I don't want our economy to be where it was back then.
There's a burning question. Ever since I read this when I first walked in – actually, when I got your email this morning, Sizzle Pig, what's that all about?
So Sizzle Pig is a software that it's patented. We actually received our patent a few weeks back. But it's a software as a service. It's a solution that allows a mass amounts of images to be unique and customized in on the fly very quickly. And so we created that as a tool for ourselves, having a hard time keeping up with all the new screens, all the new smartphones and kiosk sizes and tablet sizes. And as our customers were creating or needing to put out product, whether it be an e-commerce site or email or social media, we physically had to recreate those images manually for each place they would live. And in some cases, that would be 100 times per image, you know, different versions. And there are tools that would allow us to automate that process, but they wouldn't let us control how they would appear in that screen. And so it was a big problem for us. As a small business, it was impacting our bottom line. And also for our team members, our employees, it was impacting the morale because these guys are trained, they're paid well, paid six figures, and they're cutting up images all day because it takes so much time.
Huh.
So we created this service to solve our own problem, and it ended up being quite successful and showing it to some of our friends then. Long story short, Ford.com is our first enterprise customer. And
I've heard of them.
Still using it.
Yeah. So little company.
It's exciting. We've had 182 countries come in to our service. Right now, the Olympics, the Lillehammer guys are using it for their images.
This is not the first time I've heard a story like this where you have a company that creates something to solve one of its own problems and says, hey, wait a minute, other people can use this. So they wind up selling it. I know there's some project management software that owes its existence to, you know, having been developed to help a construction company, say, you know, run projects. This is a neat story.
Yeah, it's exciting. And at the same time, you realize you know what you don't know and you find out a lot more of what you don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't intend to commercialize a product. We intended to do what we had always done for almost 20 years now, create marketing and business solutions for clients. And we pretty much had stayed in Detroit doing that and very familiar with automotive industry and not really familiar with scaling a software as a service or even taking it to market. So thinking you know more than you know, you sort of quickly learn or slowly learn how much you don't know. But it's been a fabulous, fun ride. We've bootstrapped still. We're still bootstrapped and happy that we have some global scale.
So if I understand this, is it like flexible design that the graphics scale to whatever the tablet or smartphone or whatever you're using to view it? Is that how it works?
You know, that – thank you for asking that question. That is how it works for most people.
Mm-hmm.
So most people use what are called auto sizers or auto croppers, and they take that square image or that portrait, that landscape, that horizontal image, and they sort of automatically resize it into that shape. And so you'll look on a website. You can look at CNN or any major site at any given day, and you'll see someone's forehead cut off or someone's – half of their face is gone – or on your mobile device, you can't tell what that image and how it relates to a story, right? So those are the sites that are using those automated tools.
Okay.
And those tools are tied into their platforms, whatever's housing it.
Sure.
So what we have done that's very different is we took out the majority of the steps, the old technology that has been used in the past. You see, those of us in the tech business have gotten really excited about data. And a lot of us have put all of our eggs in the data basket as far as progressing things forward, and we didn't put a lot of time and effort into the creative side. So pairing up those variables, not just with the data and the segments, but all those different places those images need to appear and how they appear and how they look, that wasn't addressed. So we were able to use modern technology and create something new, and as a result, we cut out literally 80 to 90% of the time it takes for all platforms.
Huh.
So we can take here's a good example. So some guys in the UK, I shouldn't say guys, it's a big company. It's called
Could be some gals too, right?
So. There are some gals actually. They're called the Hut Group, and they're in the UK. They have 100 different e-commerce websites. They have a large platform, e-commerce platform, and they have major client brands like Ray-Ban and others. And they have to take their products and sell them across the variable websites, right? And prior to us, if they wanted to change how their website looked, the structure of their site, they would have to manually redo all of the product images. So it just wasn't possible to change the structure of their site. They were looking at adding on resources and different things, but then they found our tool, thankfully, and they were able to get all their websites up to speed, put more products on more sites, so they increase their clients' exposure significantly in less time. And they were actually able to take some of the resources off their team and shift them into other areas within their own company.
Now, is your business model the more they use your tool, the more you get paid? I would assume, yes.
So for the average user, those that are not enterprise, those that are small businesses or small teams, yes. It's, you know, you're paying essentially to use the service on a monthly or annual fee. For our enterprise customers, such as those that are using it for Ford.com, it lives on their server, and it's just an agreed-to contract.
So the software automatically detects what kind of device the image is going to be displayed on then, or how does it work?
No, it doesn't. The software creates a template, if you will. Mm-hmm. So let's say you have social media, social advertising, an e-com platform, email, et cetera. You need to enter in those sizes, but it's all on
one. Yeah, sure. Every image on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, they're all different, right?
So there's thousands of sizes, variables. There's no universal anything, right?
Right, right.
And including compression, which makes a big difference in how quickly your screen loads.
Yeah.
So as those are entered in, they're entered in once. You sync it to a folder, and you just keep churning your images to that same folder, if it's Box or Dropbox or Google Drive or on your own server. And it automatically resizes.
So it's all dynamic then?
It's all dynamic.
Oh,
however,
okay, got it.
You can see them. You can actually see them as they're being resized. And you can tweak and hone in on them as you'd like. So they appear on each device, on each place, and each screen exactly as you'd like. And it's like that. It's so fast.
Yeah.
And the name, where did that come from? I'm intrigued by Sizzle. Sizzle Pig has to be a really cool name, you know?
So. Right.
You know, I'm sorry, guys. We just don't have enough time for that one. We like bacon. It was actually, we have a proprietary code base for basic content network structure. It's kind of geeky. So we call it Bacon in-house. It's
basic
our own toolbox.
Basic content network structure, BAC, okay.
BCN, gotcha.
Yeah.
It's sort of the first product.
We speak geek here, so.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that's great.
Rachel.
So, Andrea, in the last segment with Andrew Basile, you'd mentioned that you just received a patent for Sizzle Pig technology. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, very excited about that.
So how will that impact the future of Grit Design in the company?
Well, it certainly gives us – it validates sort of what we have been doing and what we've been saying. Often, at first glance, someone may say, well, my system already resizes. And yes, it does. It resizes it for your system blindly, right? And so what we were able to prove out are 18 different points in our patent to show the different approaches and the different points where it is actually very, very unique in what it offers and what it provides. And so we found with production efficiencies, we've given brands and businesses significant strategic advantages.
Excellent.
Oh, go ahead. I turned it over to you there. I was pausing. So let's go back into a little bit on Inform.
Okay.
What do you got coming up that folks out there might want to know about? You got a big events coming up or training or anything like that?
Well, we just had our annual auto show breakfast, which was absolutely incredible.
I didn't get my invite to that.
Mike, you're invited to all of our events.
Oh, okay.
You have
all right.
An open
Thank
invitation.
You. Okay, good.
And I have to say that I was really proud that we were able to feature another one of the masterclass entrepreneurs, Justine Hsu, who has a school counseling initiative, or I should say platform, to connect students to internships, job shadowing opportunities, and career enrichment programs. And Justine was actually supposed to be here with us in studio today, and she ended up having the flu. So.
Oh.
But we
probably
were really
just
excited.
As well. Yeah, we didn't want to bring her in if she had the flu. That'd be the last thing we need, right? So we can get her in next month.
Absolutely.
Perhaps.
But at the auto show, we were able to connect her to Senator Stabenow and U.S. Representative Debbie Dingell. And the reason we were so excited about that is, you know, the White House has actually put out a call to action to app developers to support school counseling programs.
So yes, I didn't know that.
We're really excited about Justine's pro-up work.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
She's a great program.
All right. Well, running low on time, but we're going to have – I won't say Rochelle. We're going to have Rachel back. She's giving me a look now. I can't look at her, Rochelle.
On a regular basis.
The eyes are going to kill me if I look. So
Well, my friends are all scared. Rachel with a monthly microphone.
Yeah, so she'll be back every month to enlighten us, and hopefully Justine can join us next month. And certainly, Andrea, you're welcome to come back when
you
have news to tell. You don't even have to be on her segment. You can be one of ours. So, well, there you go. Okay, but I think we're about out of time.
Yeah,
Jessica.
We're coming to
the
end. Yeah, and thank you once again to our wonderful engineer, Jessica. We did want to thank her.
Without her, where would we be? You know, she keeps us in line.
Stumbling, mumbling, and fumbling. We're close enough for that anyway, I think. So. All right. Well, anyway, we've reached the other. Well, so
we've all reached
the end of another episode. Squared TechCast. So until next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.